Hello and welcome to Mike's iLab Podcast, episode 139, for the 24th of August, 2017. So, I thought I'd get started nice and early this Thursday, but Sod's Law, of course, battery low on my second screen computer that I use for following through on the Google Groups while doing the recording on the other machine. Well, thought I'd swap the battery out, and of course, think about resetting the BIOS. Did that and then the thing wouldn't start up at all. So what was it? Well, it turned out to be in the end the fact there were two monitors and it decided to swap over from using the onboard one to using the add-in card. When I tried to get that to work previously, it went the other way and wouldn't work with the graphics card. The DVI would go back to the onboard one. So it's always the way you think you've got everything set up in your little office and computing set up and things, and then for the sake of a battery, everything changes and adds an awful lot of extra work. The thing with the modern office, it never happened with pen, ink, and paper. So I said last week that I'd missed a page of posts I'd skipped over. I thought there'd been more, and I thought there was a particular subject that I was going to approach, and it wasn't included in the list, and I realised afterwards, but there wasn't time to go back and redo it, so I'm going to do that now. But first, a little look of what's been going on around Reading and what is going on around Reading. Of course, it's the Reading Festival starting with all the tradespeople arriving on Tuesday, the early bird tickets yesterday, Wednesday, and today the main event. Apparently, all the tickets sold out within minutes of being released online, so it's going to be busy. Looks like the weather should be pretty good. Those wellies won't be perhaps so needed, although I'm sure there's plenty of water and things splashing around on the site. There's also Wokingham Festival this weekend and lots of other activities. I heard about a big steam event down in Dorset, and I know Scott heading to a Scout Jamboree event of some sort where they've got a stand. So, and what else is going on? Well, of course, it's bank holiday and very few trains going into Waterloo on that line due to nearly all the platforms being shut and work going on the electrification on the Paddington side. So I guess everyone needs to stay in their local area and enjoy the activities that are local to them. Coming up tonight, I've got a Radark event at Sodding Rugby Club, and I'm going to take some of the TTN stuff. See, make contact. It's more of a social evening rather than talks, apparently, at the rugby club Sonning, so an interesting event. Tuesday night was the Hardware Hack, very busy, lots of faces we haven't seen for a while. Oliver Vance, Richard, myself, and Sam, who came in. It was very quiet at the end. I hadn't realised that's who he was, and I sent him a note about the various questions and things. Hopefully we move forward with his project. Although by the time I'd realised who he was, it was time for me to be heading out because it was going to be a busy night with all the disruptions on the trains. So let's go into these leftover posts from last week. Some may or may not be relevant. Luke, for instance, was saying he appears to mislaid his house keys somewhere between home and our lab. He says it has a pink key fob and a little yellow label. If anyone saw them, let him know. He hasn't posted to say whether he found them or not. Makes me think of the electronic solution, the tech solution. They're always advertising on the Twit network. A device, I think they're owned by Samsung now, called Tracker. There's T-R-A-C-K-R, so Tracker without the R, without the E at the end. And but that's, well, from the advertising, it indicates they have a big head of steam around the world. Basically, it's a Bluetooth tab and an app. So people who have Bluetooth and data on their mobile phone and install the app, maybe for their use of their own tracker, it will also detect and inform the service of other tracker, other devices it finds locally. So a sort of mix of a mesh peer and individual service. I don't know how many people use Bluetooth on their phone all the time and have data roaming going on. I guess there's groups of people who do on the iPhone and have unlimited data, and others more on pay-as-you-go who perhaps don't. And also there's the battery consideration due to the extra drain that Bluetooth has. So I've been working with TTN and Bluetooth, talking about Bluetooth, looking at connecting up one of the Arduino compatible boards from Microchip, Sodak Explorer board, and trying to use the Bluetooth on there to connect to my tablet so that I can pass information. And previously I've just been using LEDs to give me information about whether I'm connected to networks and whether it's sent the information and the spreading factor information about how strong the signal is, etc. I'm trying to get a bit more sophisticated and use the Bluetooth. It seems Bluetooth profiles for that sort of communication are quite sticky, and it seems to cache things, so you change it on the device and it doesn't necessarily change in the interface. So, for instance, the name of the Bluetooth connection service. So it's all interesting stuff, and it's all in preparation for Hebda Bridge, which starts at the end of next week. So that was misplaced house keys. Let's get on through. Wonder if Luke found them or not. And a little while back, we talked about Rupert's needing a replacement part for his 3D printer. He was having problems with heat transmission and wanted to swap a printed part for a milled aluminium part. And Boxford was an ideal potential tool for creating such a piece. And it was indeed created. And he's now just posted up pictures last week of it in place and operating. So a happy Mr. E. One of the "What does our lab do for me?" section. And there have been some problems with the people's key cards not working on the door. Hopefully those problems have gone away because we have a brand new door. And I'll come to that a bit later in the podcast. And I know Scott was working away late into the evening on Tuesday, getting that installed and working. Because not only was it a new door, but it required a totally new locking mechanism. Compared with the old Yale one, this is built into the door frame. It had a different protocol and power requirements. So I think I recall they were looking around for a MOSFET, so that sounded as that was sort of thing that was needed. And SS on the group I mentioned was doing clear out and tried to raise some funds, and he posted up some bits. Well, he's posted up some new stuff: Acro shoring props, digging bar, Explorer hard case, and a Kindle works but won't update because I jailbroke it, he says. And Eric says he is interested in the Acro props. Now, it says on the thing size 0 and 2. Surprisingly, Eric doesn't know what sizes it refers to. I hadn't even realised that these things came in sizes described like that. But I'm sure it's straightforward to Google. So if Eric takes that, then there's still a digging bar, a hard case, and won't update Kindle available. Check out the thread from last week. Linux Ultrasonic Fiber Optic Tester is the title of the thread, although the contents are now more widespread than that. And Arthur posted up some more pics of something called Telus. He posted up some pics early and posted up some more pics of said guitar as it's progressed this last week. And buried in the post is another "What does our lab do for me?" Because he says, "I can't for the life of me decide what to do with the headstock. I want to stick some ash wings on it, but can't come up with a design, so that's slowing me down. Rob had a good idea and simple for pre-bending the frets. Just a lump of hardwood with a radius cut into it and a slot for the tang to go into. It worked a treat. I'm going to get the thing strung before I do any more of the electronics. If it plays well, I might invest in some nice new single coils," he says. So it's that bit of inspiration, alternative ideas, suggestions that really can come out of just showing people your pictures and perhaps having a chat in the chill out room with people who've done similar projects or have ideas as to how they might be done. And so the picture at the bottom, I think, is that bending jig for the frets. And so, yeah, it looks an excellent idea. And one of the great things about posting up pictures in the thread is that so many people away from our lab, either former members or people who just follow along and impressed with what Reading Hackspace is and what we're able to achieve, look at the projects, and it inspires them maybe in their own Hackspace or to join a local Hackspace. Just get involved in the discussion and be impressed. And there were some further updates around the amp side and suggestions coming in from Alexander how it could be improved and repaired at the same time using some more modern boards and utilizing the existing some of the existing components, maybe like the power supply. And there's a special group within our lab who are looking at amps and that area of interest. So if it's an area you're interested in or have some expertise, and then join in with Pav and Arthur and Alexander and Matt, who are the leaders in that special area. And David comes up with a surprisingly old request, a Spectrum Sinclair, ZX Spectrum. To be more specific, he says, I could do with some assistance. It boots okay from power supplies. The original block power brick is missing in action, but it will not load any game. So far, I've tried sounds from YouTube, old Walkman and a cassette. They load, get the loading screen, but nothing happens. If anyone remembers, loading used to run crazy coloured lines across the screen. Indeed they did, yes. As it basically, it was the, for those who don't recall, both the BBC Micro, the Commodore 64, and the ZX Spectrum, and there was a ZX 80 before that, used audio tapes, audio cassette tapes, with sounds recorded at two different frequencies, much like a modem, to do the data. The different machines had different sensitivities. The BBC Micro, I think, was probably the most tolerant. The ZX needed quite power, and as Hugo replied, you have to have tried different volumes. The machine generally wouldn't work with low volume settings, but cheap cassette players would mostly distort at high volumes and clip the output. So basically, part of it was actually to do with clipping, because that way you got two separate tones more distinct. I think a bit of an analysis of what you're getting out of the audio form. So interesting, he was looking at using some YouTube ones. He's shown an example on YouTube, and that would be an interesting one. I shall star that one. But also Hugo found a site, 1000bit.it, which I guess is Italy, 1000 being spelt out numerically, 1000bit. Support manual for a Sinclair Spectrum is the title of the page. David doesn't come back and say whether he's been successful and he made any progress on that. So not at this thread, maybe later on. So if you've got a Spectrum, you're interested in resurrecting one or have done so, follow up on the thread there. Fairly self-explanatory in the title, help needed. PCB and Spectrum of old Spectrum Sinclair. But it should be a Sinclair Spectrum, I guess. And we come to a post, one I was probably talk about later, because I think there'll be some more updates. There was news about the first RLab newsletter being sent out. And the goal of this isn't really just to do a newsletter. It was to verify the mailing list. So if you're listening to this and you haven't received the newsletter, and you don't read the Google groups or forums, then you should have received one. So contact Ian and or any of the directors and let them know. Because basically they're going to be verifying the data, the membership database, and after it's verified, there will be a short opportunity, and then cards will be disabled. So it's important to get all the details sorted out. And there was an update on the Shippoko stepper backwards, as Toby says, that they found that seemed to be some problems with the stepper drivers, and trying to diagnose it seemed to be an earth leak of some sort, and it discovered that three of the four drivers appear to be dead, so they're going to be replaced. He says he's going to be away, and so progress won't be as rapid. It's a shame they got to that 95% stage and then get stuck, but Shippoko seems to have that sort of fluence on it, unfortunately. And another in the What Does Our Lab Do For Me, in the project section, Andy H from Over the Water, doing this project with a clock, says, I think I shall stop double guessing myself. I need to drive six stepper motors. And he doesn't refer back to his original project. So that's at the front of his mind, but not necessarily for everybody. But it sounded like a great project, and the other posts earlier gave a lot of information. Anyway, he's talking about driving the steppers, and asking whether he would use one of the 3D printer boards, perhaps, such as the Rumbo, and Alex confirms, yes, Rumbo would be a good cheapish board and could work with Marlin and an Arduino sketch, as that's a possible choice. Although Eric suggests that not cheaper, but maybe better, the Duet Wi-Fi or wired Duet Ethernet with a daughter board for steppers. Alex confirms that yes, it would be a choice if you wanted to do a lot more complex arc moves, which need more calculations, I guess. And Richard, he says basically that the Duet board would be good, but stepper drivers only need to enable step direction pins, and Mega 256 has more than enough ports. He says, however, would ask more about it, and of course, that referring back to the clock, Andy confirms that, and then posts a data sheet for the drivers or for the motors. Andy then questions whether they're unipolar or bipolar. If they're unipolar, he suggests a possibility of using some shift registers and some transistors, and then you wouldn't need to have a special board. As he says, I always prefer the lowest level solution, and Andy does some great projects, including some great cycle clocks, or clocks made out of recycled cycle parts, bike parts, and I've seen one of those in the bike kitchen. And he often gets commissions for repeating some of these projects because they are so beautiful and so lovely, beautifully mechanically and electronically implemented. But for bipolar, he said you would need H drivers or transistors. I was looking at sort of similar requirements for some of the projects for the Things Network horticultural nodes, particularly around things like controlling water butts. Watering systems and such like. So it's of interest to me here. Richard then says basically if they only need 20 milliamps, they should drive directly from the Arduino. They do suggest microstepping, and this is obviously from the data sheet. If you want microstepping, he says there's a chip VID 6066, and posts a link to a PDF from guy.carpenter.id.au, which is Australia, and it's available on AliExpress. And that's the current state of that project from last week. And I'm following that one with interest. So that's the end of the catch-up on last week's posts. I think it's well worthwhile. It's certainly worthwhile for me to have a look at what I missed. So I shall try and avoid making the same mistake this week. I used page up, page down, and that was obviously a mistake because it took me past more than just what I was visible on the screen in terms of posts. I'm now doing scrolling to make sure that I follow from the post that I've just or thread that I've just looked at to the next one in the list. I updated the glass bottle cutter request that Jeremy put up with my suggestion that I had last week about maybe creating a jig. I guess Jerry hadn't got time for such things, so but perhaps a suggestion for the future, or even a design for people who may be looking to put something on that other people could take advantage of. I saw Jeremy on Tuesday, but I didn't get a chance to ask him about this. So wine bottle project, he was busy sorting out things for the hot stick, I think. And I posted about my happiness to be trained about helping out with the Piranha maintenance team. Alex said the same. He's a bit more experienced with such things, so obviously would be a more rounded maintenance person in terms of doing retunes, etc. He mentions had some training from Just Add Sharks, the sadly departed Nottingham Hack spin-off from that was selling lasers. Not sure exactly what happened with their demise, but it was a shame. They were very active people, and I'm sure as individuals they're still around getting involved. So if anyone else can get involved and offer to help on be part of the maintenance team for the Piranha laser, and I guess the small laser as well, then please post up laser cutter maintenance's thread. And I posted my update from last week for Jack from Southampton Hackspace, who was interested in visiting and talking about lasers, his experience as a creator. And he put a link to his website where he's got some very interesting creations. I just said basically that it was a summer hiatus time, so sometime later in September would probably be the time to pick up on the thread or expect a reply. And an update on the Boxford move over to the smoothie with B, lowercase b, CNC, controlling it. Major sticking point, says Toby, is how the tool changes are implemented. BCNC relies on sending an M0 command to feed hold the smoothie, and the smoothie ignores this command and carries on anyway. So that's something that needs an alternative solution I'm looking at. And Richard comes in and says, yes, as Toby said, we are confident we know enough about the Boxford to change the controller. We could keep the existing separate motors and spindle driver, saving cost and making the conversion simpler. He says he likes the smoothieware software, but the feed hold issue, it does have that. But he's also saying, if anyone wants to get involved, please join in, especially Python people. And the plan is to use part of the workflow of Fusion 360, which is what Gavin has worked on, some of the conversion scripts. So, yes, I guess one of the things is can we talk to the smoothieware creators or modify the smoothieware to implement the M0 command that comes to my mind, and maybe that's where the Python requirements come in. So if you've got those skills, even if you don't know anything about the Boxford, pipe up on the thread, Boxford improvement thread. Another in there, what does our lab do for me? Gavin asks, has anyone got a bidirectional logic level converter that will work between 2.8 and 5 volts to hand? And Richard said, yes. This or this, and got both, and points to an Adafruit and a Spark Fun link. And a bit of, I think, auto, damn you, autocomplete, Pav says. He's talking about the boxes, because he put 90 boxes out apparently, and they were all blank. They're metal boxes that he acquired a great crowd for, and said if people find them useful, just add an extra donation, pay into the bank account. If you do that, then it's a good idea to let the directors know, Andrew in particular. If you can't put a note on the paying in, which you can, in Reading you can, but in other HSBCs they don't allow that. Not quite sure what the difference is. I think maybe Reading is a business-orientated HSBC, and the one we have in Wokingham is a domestic one, but they won't allow me to, whereas when I paid something in Reading, they did. Anyway, put a note to say that it's an extra amount so it doesn't get confused with your regular direct debit payment. Still plenty to grab, he says. I bought some colourful nose to KNOSWS. Certainly, I think that was WAMS, I imagine it should be. So obviously converted it and I found that. And you don't always spot that it suddenly changes what you're saying. And that can be amusing as well as annoying. So I thank Pav for thinking of everybody and providing a pile of boxes for people's projects. And after a bit of a hiatus on his chair project, Carl says, just back, I'd like to use the TIG welder to weld two aluminium bits and finish off my chair project. Anyone will give me an induction? And Arthur says that I don't know anyone else has used TIG for AC welding. I'm not that good at it, but it is super satisfying. So they hopefully got together and were able to get Carl's chair together for his first demonstration run. And I mentioned last week about the bike stand that Arthur had been building and welding and how he was finishing it off. I posted up saying it was looking very good. But also I asked if anyone had an older crank. I said crack puller. I should have been crank puller. So that's my typing. And so I just need an odd one to have in my toolkit for the old bikes in Ireland. And otherwise I could take my bike here over to the Hackspace without a problem. But Martin, who's moved down from the tank core down at Arborfield, and they moved to Lynham together with Charles of the Recreation Society, who did some great casting some time ago. Anyway, he's posted up a link for me, £2.50. Looks a lot cheaper than the ones I saw in the shops. So, and I think they probably just have a huge markup. So, thanks for that. Martin, I shall let him know. Have a look at that one and see if I can get hold of one of those for eBay. He says, be wary of old ones as they might have damaged threads which can damage your cranks. Yeah, so not sure they damage cranks as much as a block of wood, but then maybe they do because they're quite a fine thread. So I mentioned about September Repair Cafe, and there was a bit of discussion last week about a suggestion that somebody take their laptop down to Repair Cafe being at our lab, and I thought, that's funny because I didn't think it was at our lab because it had said venue to be confirmed. So Stuart posted up, we were planning to have the September Repair Cafe at the Chalkboard Cafe, but it has closed down. So unless there is an objection, I propose to hold the event at our lab. Does mean that September and October events will be at our lab. That is Sunday, 17th of September, and then October the 15th. Please say if you're planning something that would conflict with this. He then updates saying there were no objections, so the next Repair Cafe is scheduled for the 17th of September at our lab. And the Waving a Thing thread sort of end up getting mixed between two different things, both the spot welder and the CNC lathe. And the two separate threads are updated because I posted my thoughts up about the value of a CNC lathe and its value for the hack space, which basically where I said that I say it was really for more production, where you spend time doing the setup and then you get the repeats many times over without any more manual work, which obviously if you're doing by hand you have to do each one individually, but as most of the stuff we do on the lathe is a one-off anyway, the time to set it up is probably as quick as doing it yourself. Just need to develop that bit of hands-on skill, and that's part of the difference. The machine will do what you tell it, whereas your hands don't necessarily do what you tell them. You need to have a bit of a feel for that sort of thing. But it is once you've got it, then that's a skill and a useful thing to do. Anyway, regarding the spot welder, my thoughts were about joining cells together and make battery packs as one of the possible uses, as well as repairing things like barbecue grills and other such grids that are spot welded together. Alex says, is it the sort? And later on, Andy says, yes, it would do battery packs, but would need a set of electrodes so that both are on the same side of the tab to be welded. Normally, the work is pinched between one fixed and one movable electrode. This could be a simple handle with two prongs, he suggests. Richard was replying to the part about the CNC lathe and agrees that he says, my experience too, our work tool room would nearly always use a non-CNC lathe for the types of jobs we use at our lab, whereas a CNC lathe would be way down his list of useful tools. I am interested in how a cam part of Fusion 360 can handle lathes and rotary laser cutters. The ability to make coordinated XY moves is of big value to a CNC mill, but the need for coordinated multi-axis moves much less so on a lathe. So that he explains there, and Eric really agrees. No idea if they use a CNC capstan lathe, but what you need for multiple tool changes. So there is a lot of setup to do, so it's not really of interest unless you're producing lots of the same part, which sounds like production, not hacking. And I mentioned that I sent a note to Sam to say that had he seen the various replies to his original post, as the project was of interest to me, and other people were asking questions to help him move it forward, and he hadn't seen it, so he said he wanted to go along for Hardware Tuesday, which he did. So he was quite quiet sitting at the end and hadn't realised that that was Sam, not having met him in person. And so introduced anyway, he replied both to Gavin and to the others. But Vince, Gavin, Alex and Richard were all able to get together. But also he posted here in the thread a link to a project called a Drift Boy. He says, just to clarify, the Drift Boy is not my project. I've been speaking to the creator so I can build on and adapt what he has already made. So it will fit in with my own little project, a sailing drone for the Micro Transat competition. Don't know, I haven't got a link to that one. This is Wayne's Drift Boy project, he says, and puts a link to that. He says he's made a few versions of the Drift Boy, but they're all made with Adafruit with shields and then built off it to try and simplify it, save space and reduce the risk of components being disconnected. I like to get as many components on the circuit onto one board. He says he's agreed to share all the files of the build. I haven't asked him directly if this is meant to be open source, he said, I'll follow up on that. So that's great, because we are great supporters of open source, and it can be beneficial both for the project owner as well as the people who want to use the product, because it can move things forward quickly and there can still be some commercial element in, if you wish to recover your costs or make it into a business. But Alex has got a similar project, but on the 3D front. He started off being, as he said himself, a bit too ambitious, trying to build a full 3D printer controller. And now he's going to do something a bit more around the controller part of the heated end, a dual feed heated end controller. So because he came stumbled across problems with getting KiCad to produce the circuit as a design, and said he needed to spend a bit more time learning some of the more in-depth elements of KiCad or KiCad. And yeah, I think somebody else said the same thing to me this week. It's a great tool, but it does involve some experience, and it's not all easily learnt from YouTube videos or documentation. So looking at the Drifting Boy project, season 2 of our Drifting Boy project is ongoing as of mid-August 2017. We have 3 operational buoys in the North Atlantic, Gulf of Mexico and Pacific. See the deployment of the buoys below and follow their progress on the tracking page. So that's it's one of these hosted Wixsite.com, and the hazard with those is that sometimes they disappear because I guess you have to either keep paying or you're relying on Wix not being taken over, that WIX, by somebody else who either wants to charge or clears away all of the old sites. And you're able to donate, look at the information, frequently asked questions, and some YouTube videos of the boy and their deployment. Then some photos from the front door change. So Arthur posts up pictures of the old one coming out and the new one going in. There were lots of activity going on Tuesday. Tom and Arthur and others doing a great job. I got the cocoa matting put down again last night and a bit of tidy around so that it was as good as it could be for the open evening. And it was great because there were lots of visitors came along. I think the only thing we're missing at the moment is a doorbell, but I think the wire's there for that. The other thing is hopefully it'll be accessible, more accessible for Faye and the wheelchair. So I'm not sure about the matting. It's meant to be a ramp, I think, being considered for that. But the door opens the other way, and it has a new sensor which is on the outside. So it should be more sensitive. I certainly found it was okay. Whereas before, the other one being in the middle of the door had to actually receive the RF through the door. And that proved a bit problematic with some cards. The only thing that not mentioned here is that because the door opened back, it gets against the stop is against the brickwork. So there needs to be a hard stop to prevent the door if it gets blown backwards, for instance, stressing the hinges, as there's quite a lot of leverage in the few inches between the brickwork position and the actual hinge themselves. So be a bit gentle with the door if you're using it and leaving it open. Beware of a wind until either a stop's put against the brickwork or one of the suggestions was driving it into the concrete. So that'll probably be part of the hacking the puddle project, I imagine, as well. So down to the last four threads. Retro Gaming Night, Castle Tap this Saturday. That explains it. Keegan, who involved a lot of activities at the Castle Tap, and that's not round the corner, round by the big roundabout. Don't know where it is. Look it up on Google. I'll be taking part in the big sleep out in aid of Launchpad, Keegan says, local charity that helps homeless people in the town. Normally I wouldn't post charity spam, however this Saturday we're hosting a retro gaming night at the Castle Tap. It's near the space and pretty relevant in of interest to many, he says, and indeed that's true. Kicks off at 5 o'clock in the evening and will run till late. We have a fair few old consoles as well as an original Compaq 486 for some classic DOS gaming too. My old colleague has let us have an N64 with GoldenEye. We're going to run a tournament. I'm also hoping to have my virtual pinball table there too. That was a project that Keegan did at the space. I think it was the one he did for Reading Beer Festival, if I remember correctly. And he puts a link to a Facebook events page. And then he says, if you can't make it, would like to support us, donating or sharing our sponsorship page would be fantastic. And he puts a link to the Just Giving page, justgiving.com, fundraising, Castle Tap Sleep Out, all one word. And we welcome Amrit, newbie here, he says. I'm unsure of the norm, but ping out to see what happens. My area of interest lies in electronics and microcontrollers. Particular interest is Arduino, ESP8266, IoT, and making things happen in the real world. Plan to be a regular and wondered if anyone was getting involved in or perhaps help. Words of wisdom, a couple of projects, a small GPS location tracker using Google Maps, GSM, and GPS, emergency home help button with some sort of wireless tech to either a PSDN dialer or Wi-Fi messaging. Interesting, PSDN, the older POTS. It's a blast from the past, as we might say. We'd go if anyone has experience helping. So Mark says, yeah, sounds fun. I made a tracker with ESP, doesn't use GPS, just Google's location API. And he puts a post to his, that's to the Google one, not to his website, although I know he does have links to his code. I also note there is, as of today, some kind of announcement of a new ESP chip. Ah, so that's interesting. And he puts a link to the expressive.com site there, one which is, that's good, interesting news in itself. So, Oliver, who has the PiCycle and is resurrecting, I saw him on Tuesday, and he's resurrecting the PiCycle project, which he had to put on a back burner while he took up his new job. Things have settled down enough that he's able to get back to it, and is going to revisit it from scratch, because it was a build on his original college project, which then sort of grew a bit like Topsy and had things added on, and he thinks it would be very beneficial to go back to the start, recode it, and take all the best bits and put them together. So watch out for PiCycle and that what he's doing on that. But he mentioned LoRaWAN, which is a Things Network project, so it's great that he's mentioning that. Saves me doing it, I would have done. And yes, so Vance caught up with him on Tuesday. And Vance says he'll be around most Tuesday nights, so keep up with progress, so that's good. And good to see a note from Chris Bingham of the brewery fame, also a member. Those changes are going on the brewery side from what I hear. I haven't heard any final bits on pieces. Need to catch up with him on that. Anyway, he welcomes Amit and talks about, well, his project where he was doing the beehive stuff. And quite a good update there. I shall have a look through that. So that's a great bit of a news and several posts there tucked away within that new wireless projects thread from newbie Amit. A couple of people looking for inductions on the laser. Tony is tied up with things at the moment, so I'm not sure who's doing inductions at the moment. No reply on that yet. So finally, an update on tool purchase proposal, the buying of Axminster. The bandsaw we didn't get at the auction had quite a few people interested, says Arthur, both here and talking at our lab. The auction went to the point where it would be more beneficial to buy one new from Axminster. And so he's proposing we buy one for a new one for the space. Woodworking is a fast-growing part of our lab, he says. Over the past few years, the bandsaw is a workhorse of a tool for all forms of woodwork. The little one we have works, but is fairly limited in comparison to what it can cut, and table and guides are relatively flimsy. And he gives a bit more justification behind it. Toby says that he's in for that. Richard cautions, I don't think we'll be able to make a fair decision on this right now. There are many items on our list we want money spent, which I consider a higher priority. And he puts a list of some of them, including at the top, fire safety, the lake, new doors and windows. Well, the new doors and windows are going through. But Richard says he did speak with Axminster last year and they were interested in the hack space and might get involved. So that's a possible way of moving forward. And then the thread develops into a slightly different direction, because Andy N spotted an auction for a different machine that apparently you can has a blade welder, which allows you to effectively make your own blades. I guess if they stretch, you can shorten them, perhaps. I don't know. I haven't looked at all the details there, but there's a discussion about it. So anyone who's interested in the machine tool side, particularly the woodworking, has an opinion, view on the bandsaw, and you haven't seen this thread, it's currently being updated fairly rapidly, because the I don't know when the auction finishes, but Ian would like to have some feedback about bidding process before he puts in bids. So check out the tool purchase proposal and follow it. What's going on with the latest thread and information at the bottom there. So that's the end of the threads for this week. How are we doing? Yes, a bit over half an hour and a good catch up. But of course, I was thirsty and that's only from Sunday to Thursday. So everyone have a great weekend, whatever you're doing over the bank holiday. If anyone's going along to Radark tonight, I should see you there. And I'll catch up with everybody. Probably be doing the podcast on Wednesday next week. Try and get the decks cleared ready for the other activities I'm involved in over the Wuthering Bites events. So, this is Mike the Bee, signing off.